Stewart.
Here.
You should tell.
Here.
And Walls.
Here.
There are 22 present and one absent.
In honor and recognition of Women's History Month, I welcome the Mid-Hudson Women's Chorus to share a few songs. An Ulster County nonprofit, the Mid-Hudson Women's Chorus has performed their art for nearly half a century. Their singers range in age from 20-something to 90. Each year, they generously award a scholarship to a gifted high school senior pursuing musical education. It's a privilege to have them here with us tonight and to perform for us. That would have been quite crowded up here. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'd like to announce some birthdays for the month. Legislator Jeff Collins, March 2nd. Legislator Tom Corcoran, March 15th. Minority Counsel Nick Pascal, March 27th. And Legislator Rich Walls, March 28th. And Legislator Greg McCullough, March 31st. Happy birthday, everyone. We are going to have our first public hearing, and the first public hearing is on issues before the legislature tonight. I just want to remind everybody that they have 2 minutes to speak. We encourage you to speak, and we also ask you to be respectful, please. Thank you. Do we have people signed up for the public hearing?
Yes. Tonight's public hearing is on proposed local law number 1 of 2024, a local law amending Article 3, Hotel and Motel Room Occupancy Tax of the Code of the County of Ulster in relation to termination of taxable rent. There are 11 speakers signed up for this public hearing. The first speaker is Jamie Capuano.
Hello, everyone. Thank you. I just wanted to take a quick opportunity to remind everybody that our 2024 budget does have $6.3 million budgeted for occupancy tax. Based on this proposed local law amendment, this would impact our budget of up to about $1 million. That would be potentially 15% reduction in our overall budgeted expense or budgeted revenue for this area. Thank you.
The next speaker signed up is Jay Nelson.
For this public hearing, we're asking that this is for issues in front of this legislature this evening. We will have a public hearing, a public comment session at the end of the session for issues that are not before the legislature.
Point of order.
All righty, we'll call you at this time. Thank you for your patience, sir.
This is, point of order, if I may. This is for the local law number 1 specifically, so not public comment before the legislature. This is specific to the occupancy tax, I believe.
I'm sorry, my apology for that. It is for the occupancy tax law.
The next speaker signed up is Lynn Sakai.
Good evening. I'm Lynn Sakai, and I'm here tonight in front of you as a member of the Ulster Activists Affordable Housing Committee, and as a voter, and as a taxpayer. Last year, the Ulster County Legislature admirably established the Ulster County Housing Action Fund, aimed to mitigate the growing affordability crises in our communities. This was coupled with the passing of the 4% occupancy tax, which would fund the fund. The new occupancy rate went into effect only 1 month ago, and already there is a proposal to decrease the taxable base, which was already decreased in the first place, and by half. this new proposal without any hard evidence to support such a reduction is not only premature, it's an about face from the direction our county should be heading in. Many of you legislators ran on a platform of affordable housing. I stand before you tonight urging that you reject the base rate change proposal. To paraphrase Nike, just don't do it. Don't vote for this amendment. Instead, just continue on the path to continue to grow our Ulster County Housing Action Fund. Thank you.
The next speaker signed up is Steve Bush, who will be followed by Tom Denton.
Good evening. Thank you. I'm from the town of Accord, and my town was mentioned in this New York Times article that came out on February 18th. It's called, "These Small Towns Have a Big City Problem. The Rent is Way Too High." The challenges are acute in parts of the Hudson Valley, where fair market rents have increased by as much as 45% in some places since 2019. According to a report published last year by Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress, rents have risen much faster than wages for many in the region, according to the report. Case in point, a student retention coordinator at a local community college, her son and her partner, were forced to move out of their $900 a month apartment in Ellenville because the landlord was selling the building. The only thing they could find after 6 months' search was a small two-bedroom trailer in Accord, where the rent is $2,000 a month, way out of their budget. According to the Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress report, using average renter wages, a person in Ulster would have to work 61 hours or 1.5 jobs to afford a one-bedroom apartment, and 79 hours or two full-time jobs to afford a two-bedroom. We have a housing crisis. So my question is, why wouldn't these resorts and hotels want to support their fair share of the affordable housing initiative for the community and for their own employees and staff? Thank you.
You probably do anyway, too. My name's Tom Denton, Town of New Paltz. I'm a member of the UACT Housing Committee. UACT opposes this amendment in local law for three reasons. One, it's as drafted, it's vague, confusing, difficult to understand. Non-passive activity is too generally defined. The schedule of payments that includes the word other in the breakdown of possible combinations presumably is non-passive activity, though it doesn't say so. Two, it's unfair. Each category is allotted one other. How do smaller hotels, which have continental breakfasts, swimming pools, fitness rooms, figure in this scheme? What about electric car chargers? What additional carve-outs might we anticipate in the future? The effect of the proposed change allowing mega hotels a 20% rate to figure the base cost of a room while others are charged 60 to 85% is to leave little guys at smaller hotels paying full freight while big guys get breaks. Sounds familiar. The change would bring the occupancy tax cost to a big guy guest close to par in dollars with what the little guy pays. A Mohonk room on par with a Hampton Inn room? Don't think so. Keep in mind, the Ulster occupancy tax is still lower than that of its neighbors, 4%, not 5%. You might hear that the mega hotel's customers will decide not to book because of the 40% rate. Not persuasive. for these folks who can afford the mega hotel charges. The tax set at the current 40% will amount to the cost of a few martinis. The Housing Action Fund resolved, the body here resolved last year that housing is a public purpose, a responsibility of this body. The revenue you
Sir,
heard
you
tonight
could wrap
would
it up,
be dramatically reduced. Please, let's not cripple the Housing Action Fund before it gets going by raiding its coffers. Thank you.
The next speaker is Shelley Turk, who will be followed by Tom Smiley.
Hi, I'm Shelley Turk, owner, part of the Rocking Horse Ranch team, maybe the quieter part. And I would first like to thank Chair Criswell, for prompt follow-through and the legislative group that was tasked with further review of the occupancy tax formulation. We are most appreciative of your extra time, your work dedicated to understanding our position. And to be clear, we have never asked or demanded to receive a tax break or a reduction in taxes. We've maintained our stance to be taxed fairly and appropriately. The bed tax of 1991 had language that was cumbersome and ill-defined, as we know it was constituted from a New York State guideline on sales tax. But the intent is a tax on beds and rooms. Our ask is to be taxed fairly and on parity with other motels and hotels in the county. Rocking Horse Ranch and Mohonk Mountain House have clearly and evidentially supported and demonstrated the unique and all-inclusivity of our amenities that attribute to the higher cost of our rooms. I am most confident that you will not find another hotel or motel, Airbnb, or lodging in Ulster County, or even in Dutchess County, that offers the incredible number of activities, the entertainment meals that we include with our stay. Once again, we are grateful to those legislators that have taken the time to visit us and have recognized as well as acknowledged this disproportion. We continue, as always, to invite any of you and all of you to come visit us, see for yourself what we do on a daily basis for our guests, for our staff, and for our community. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Tom Smiley. I'm the CEO of Mohonk Mountain House and fifth generation in the family that's owned and operated the Mountain House for the last 155 years. We currently employ over 700 employees, and even at our peak employment in the summer of about 850, we provide affordable housing to over 25% of our staff on-site. And, you know, I completely agree affordable housing is a huge challenge, and we support that. As Shelley Turk pointed out, we're just here to ask that we be taxed at a fair level. One of the comments was there was no hard evidence. We actually met with a subcommittee of this legislature that was tasked with looking at this. And we showed through our expense, our operating expenses, how much of our actual expense to deliver our services to our guests applies to the room, how much applies to meals, how much applies to activities. And in the draft legislation, it is reflective of the amount that actually applies to what it costs us to provide the service. If we wanted to go on revenues, that's a challenge. We offer an inclusive rate, and we can allocate revenue anywhere we want. It's pretty hard for me to allocate expenses to any other area. The expense goes where the expense goes. So we felt that was the cleanest, fairest, most honest way to look at it. We do believe we pay our fair share at this proposed rate because it's representative of the portion that goes to the room occupancy, not the overall stay. And that's why there's a table with a variety of different rates, because some places just offer rooms. Some places offer room and a meal, two, three meals, activities, etc. So the intent of the way this law was drafted in 1991 was to reflect the actual cost of occupying a room for those that offered more than a room in their rate. And all we asked was that we look at the rates because we recognize that our expenses to operate have shifted over time. So it's really just realigning the allocations to where they should be. Thank you very much.
The next speaker is Rachel Gans.
Hello. My name is Rachel Gans, and I've owned a home in Bloomington for 25 years. I'm speaking to reject the local law one to amend the hotel tax downwards.
a well-conceived, well-formulated, well-thought-out law that benefits people who need our help. I see no reason to change what you just recently activated. Thank you.
I'm Ellen Rocco. I'm also a member of Ulster Activists. I am a former special ed teacher, and I have seen over the years how important good, safe housing is for kids, and they need that. And we must deliver that if we want good, strong, healthy members of our community. So please don't take that away. Thank you.
The last speaker signed up for this public hearing is Steve Turk.
Hello, everybody. I want to give a special thank you to the committee members and Chair Kathy Nolan, who were assigned a specific task to review the data that was provided and subsequently ask further, more pertinent, direct questions that resulted in a large file of data that they had to absorb and review before we came here tonight. I want to point out for the record that we all agree that housing is in a crisis. Mohonk and Rocking Horse are doing more than our fair share. We employ 20% of our workforce, and right now we're in contract to build at least another 5 to 10%, hopefully by the end of this calendar year. We absolutely get it. But remember this, families that come to Rocking Horse, they're not coming to rent a room and go off property. They're coming to enjoy our ski area, our dude ranch, our indoor water park, our outdoor water park, four meals a day offered in our all-inclusive dining. Jamie, Lynn, Steve, Tom, Rachel, Tom, and Ellen, we get it. But you've got to remember, on our ski area alone, we make more snow per acre than Bel Air does. Oh, and by the way, Bel Air looks like they're campaigning, and it looks like it might happen. They're going to get a $15 million grant by the end of this year. Private properties do not get this attention. Bel Air, there's no occupancy tax. We pay New York State sales tax, we pay Ulster County tax, and we currently pay the occupancy tax, as I just mentioned. Wooden Wheels Roller Rink, we have all the same facilities. They don't pay it. 209 Skate Time does not pay this occupancy tax. We are still continuing to pay our occupancy tax. It's just this increase to the percentage of where is we're having this conflict. I have asked and practically begged, please visit us. See what we do at our properties. You will see how comprehensive we are. We truthfully are.
Sir, I'm going to ask you to
wrap
up your
comments.
Okay,
we truthfully are the most comprehensive, all-inclusive hospitality resort in the U.S. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you. And is there anybody else who would like to speak on proposed law, local law number one? Going once? Twice? I hear a motion to close public hearing. Do I have a second? Second from Legislator Donaldson. All in favor? Any opposed? Public hearing is closed. We will now move on to our public comment period, which is for issues before the legislature tonight. Clerk Fabella, do we have anyone signed up for the public comment period? Thank you. We're conferring up here.
The only person on the first public comment list is Jay Nelson.
Hi, I'm Jay Nelson. I live at 144 South Ohioville Road, which is about a mile and a half from the proposed GOC-EOC complex on Paradise Lane in New Paltz. Specifically, what I'm proposing is that the southern 20 to 25 acres of this 57-acre parcel, which is in forest, be placed in a land trust or a conservation easement or a deed change so it can be protected in perpetuity. The current property line runs east to west, west to east, 21 acres from the northern road, which is Paradise Lane, where the GOC and EOC would be cut out. The forest, which is in the southern portion, could be blocked off, and I don't mean literally, I mean a change of property line, so that because there are 35 acres in the southern portion of this property as opposed to 21 acres in the northern part. And the land, and half of that, a good portion of that 35 acres in the south is meadowland and doesn't need to be protected as a forest would be. A land trust would cost $20,000 to $30,000 one time. The land would be inspected once a year to make sure that no changes have happened, and there would be no additional cost for the life of the land trust. Over time, maybe a gravel drive or for a parking lot could be put in from the South Ohioville Road access, which is not actually a road at this point, so people could walk into the lovely forest on the 20 to 25 acres of the southern portion of the property. I want to add a P.S. here since I have the time. When the Turks, who are here tonight, owning Rocking Horse Ranch and Splashdown in Fishkill, proposed their convention center and hotel and a couple of restaurants for Paradise Lane some years ago, they included that the southern forested portion that I'm talking about right now would be a park open to the public. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. You can submit those comments if you'd like to the clerk. Excellent. Is there anybody else who has a public comment on issues before the legislature this evening? Seeing none, I will call for a motion to close public comment. Legislator Kitchen and a second. Legislator Harmon, all in favor? Any opposed? Thank you. All right. I'd like to ask for a motion to dispense with the reading of the previous meeting minutes.
Move to dispense with the reading of the previous
minutes. And is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. There are various communications listed and on file in the clerk's office that remain available for inspection by those who are interested. Please contact the office of the clerk. Now I would like to move on to granting privilege of the floor to Katie Hines, who is president of the board, and Danny Hughes, who is the treasurer of the Hudson Valley Women in Business. Founded in 2014, Hudson Valley Women in Business is a nonprofit organization dedicated to championing women-owned businesses across the Hudson Valley region. They work to empower, educate, and uplift women entrepreneurs and executives, nurturing growth and long-lasting success. Welcome.
Ulster County is just one of the nine counties that Hudson Valley Women in Business serves, and I grew up right here. I grew up in New Paltz. I started my own business here because I saw a need in the community. And over the last 5 years of owning my business, I have found that it's not only very challenging, because there's a lot of plates to keep spinning, but it's kind of lonely. So where do business owners go to connect with people who are like-minded, who always do too much and don't celebrate our accomplishments, to get the help and advice they need from a community of people who really get it, and to get the education and support that they need? It's scary to walk into a room full of suits where everyone seems to already know each other, afraid of introducing yourself, afraid of asking a question, or of getting the help that you need to succeed. Hudson Valley Women in Business is a safe, non-judgmental space for female-identifying entrepreneurs and intrapreneurs who feel supported no matter what phase of business that they're in. Like the award-winning designer who's been in business for over 25 years, and the marketing agency owner who needs a graphic designer. Or the woman who's just starting a beverage company while owning her full-time, while still working full-time for a business, and she still is like seeking capital, or the entrepreneur's entrepreneur who helps people find capital. Hudson Valley Women in Business offers a welcoming atmosphere online and in person, where fears of judgment do not exist. Our mission is to support and uplift women by fostering meaningful connections and powerful educational events. By next year, we'll have mentorship programs, masterminds, and cohorts to help women at any level of business. We are 100% volunteer-run. The advisory board had been supporting the organization for the last few years, and then the founder decided to step down, and the advisory board decided to step up, and last year we officially became a nonprofit. And we did that because we know the impact that this organization has had on our businesses, and we have our eyes set to the future to grow this organization and to do even more for women in the Hudson Valley. But we can't do it alone. We're creating corporate partnerships and founding memberships to help us build momentum that we need to build this organization to the next phase of this nonprofit.
Connecting and educating women business owners empowers our entire economic system. In the U.S., there are over 14 million women-owned small businesses, and we account for 42% of all businesses in the country. Women-owned businesses generate $2.7 trillion in annual revenue and employ almost 12.2 million people. We are the sheroes of the U.S. economic system. But we're still less likely to raise venture or investment capital, receive loans, or get access to federal programs. Women-owned businesses only account for 9.2% of the workforce and only 5.8% of the U.S. business revenue. But here's the good news. Women-led startups generate 63% more value for investors. Women-led teams generate a 35% higher return on investment. Approximately 17% of Black women are in the process of starting or running new businesses, and Black women-owned businesses brought in an estimated $141 billion in gross revenue in 2020. Almost 90% of female-owned businesses achieve medium to higher ESG scores. These ESG scores are attributed to gender balance, governance, upskilling activities, and the environmental components in overall business. The opportunity to connect and empower women who own their businesses with women in positions of power within larger businesses of the Hudson Valley is massive. The HVWIB is on a mission to enrich the economic health and wealth of women-identifying entrepreneurs and executives in the Hudson Valley. We have 3,000 members, and we're just getting started. We expect our membership to double over the next 24 months. We aim to encourage larger companies to do business with women-owned businesses and vice versa by creating programs and networking opportunities for women executives and women-owned businesses. We're seeking corporate and community sponsorship to fund our educational networking program for 2024 and 2025, and we're reaching out to large and mid-sized corporations in the Hudson Valley to help us grow the impact of HVWIB. As women-owned businesses rise, everyone benefits, our economy, our community, and our families, because women do business differently. We'd love you to visit our website, hvwib.org, to learn more about us and to invest in women-owned businesses. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Please stay up here for a moment. I want to call on Vice Chair Sperry, Chair of the Economic Planning, Education, Employment, Arts, and Agriculture Committee to the podium to present a Pride of Ulster County Award to Hudson Valley Women in Business.
Thank you. That's amazing.
Thank you.
I'm just going to read it.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, as a woman and a legislator and a small business owner in Ulster County, it is my distinct honor to offer you a Pride of Ulster County Award from the Ulster County Legislature for your dedicated service in uplifting and supporting women-owned businesses and entrepreneurship and leaving lasting positive impacts throughout Ulster County on this 19th day of March, 2024.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations.
I think they're
going
to
want to. Okay, hang on. Let me come down.
Should I move this?
I now call on Legislator Hansett and Legislator Hewitt, Chair and Deputy Chair of the Law Enforcement and Public Safety Committee, and Legislator Eric Kitchen to the podium to present the Pride of Ulster County Award to Emergency Services Dispatcher Anthony McKenzie. Mr. McKenzie, a resident of the town of Ulster, whose guidance resulted in life-saving efforts on former Ulster County Legislator Al Bruno, performed by his wife. I'd like to invite Mr. McKenzie, Director Everett Erickson, and Deputy Andrew Cafaldo of Ulster County Department of Emergency Services, and former legislator Al Bruno and Lisa Bruno, to please join at the podium.
Good evening, everyone. We're going to start with first congratulations and thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Director Erickson is going to speak of what happened on that evening. So,
thank you and good evening. Ulster County receives over 62,000 911 calls a year. On this day, Lisa Bruno made one of these calls, facing an unimaginable crisis as her husband lay unconscious and unresponsive. She pleaded for assistance, desperately seeking help. In such moments, a 911 dispatcher emerges as an unsung hero. While other first responders take charge upon arrival, it's the dispatcher who initially guides and reassures callers like Mrs. Bruno. Emergency Services Dispatcher Anthony McKenzie became the hero for Mr. and Mrs. Bruno on that day, offering a calming presence and vital assistance. Dispatchers undergo 6 months of rigorous training and annual continuing education to uphold national standards and provide effective life-saving measures to residents and visitors alike, demonstrating exceptional care in their duties. On this day, Anthony was able to keep Mrs. Bruno calm while assessing the situation through various questions and then walking her through thorough CPR instructions until a local EMS agency arrived on scene. Sadly, dispatchers often remain unaware of the outcomes of such medical emergencies, which can take a toll on them over time. Yet, witnessing Mr. and Mrs. Bruno standing beside Anthony, expressing their gratitude and acknowledging his role in saving one's life is truly heartwarming. Anthony's dedication alongside that of his colleagues in delivering life-saving interventions to county's residents deserves immense appreciation. Anthony, I extend my heartfelt thanks for your unwavering commitment to the welfare of our community. Thank you.
Former Ulster County Legislator Al Bruno, would you like to say something, please?
A lot of you already know me. Those who don't, my name is Al Bruno. I was a victim of a coronary. I went unconscious. And if it wasn't for Mr. McKenzie here and my wife, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now. Thank you seems like such a small thing. And while I was laying in the ICU unit, now New York Presbyterian Hospital, it hit me. We all of us here are proud of our first responders, or our EMS, our police, the fire departments, and everybody who's there on the scene. And they're the ones, when we think of first responders, that we think of automatically, because that's what we've been trained to do. But the first responder is these gentlemen right here who pick up that phone. They are the first true first responders. And for that, I can't thank you enough.
Forget the handshake.
Okay. So we have a Pride of Ulster County Award presented by the Ulster County Legislature to Anthony McKenzie, Ulster County Department of Emergency Services, Kingston, New York. In recognition of your life-saving efforts on January 20th, 2024, we commend Emergency Services Dispatcher Anthony McKenzie for his swift and decisive actions in a critical situation. His unwavering dedication and exceptional professionalism undoubtedly made a profound impact, reaffirming the invaluable role of emergency responders in safeguarding our community. We extend our heartfelt gratitude for his service and commitment to saving lives. Signed this 19th day of March, 2024, Peter Criswell, Chair, Ulster County Legislature. Congratulations. Thank you so much.
Good evening. I'm very honored and grateful to be a recipient of this award. I have been with 911 since 2007. I've done various roles. I was supervised for 8 years. My current title now is dispatcher, acting dispatch supervisor, and I help train the newer dispatchers. 911 dispatchers must maintain the ability to remain calm in emergencies and work well in demanding and stressful settings. It is on very rare occasion we hear about outcomes of others, especially positive ones. Out of the blue, I happened to be working one evening, and a friend of Mr. Bruno's had called on our non-emergency line asking for us to look for a call that we took on January 20th, providing CPR instructions to a lady named Lisa Bruno. I offered my assistance in actually finding this call, as it didn't strike me that I was the one that took the call. Shortly after that, I spoke with Mr. Bruno on the phone. He told me about his journey and what it was like and the obstacles he faces. He is one of the most positive, motivated people I've ever spoken to. After we talked, I had one question for him. How's Mrs. Bruno? Due to her quick action of realizing something was wrong, initiating 911 and trusting in me to guide her through her observations, she followed CPR instructions, applying them to her husband. She was able to keep blood and oxygen moving around his body until Diaz, the ambulance, arrived to take over. After he was transported, she continued to follow him on his journey through various hospitals and surgeries, and she still remains a great support to him. Mrs. Bruno, you're awesome. You did a great job. I also want to acknowledge my wife and daughter for their support of me being at work long days, long stretches at a time. Without their support, it wouldn't make my job any easier be able to even do it. I also like to thank my coworkers. We deal in very stressful times, and we end up becoming family and friends. And especially thank you, Kathy and Mike, for being here tonight. Again, thank you for this acknowledgement. I hope Mr. Bruno and Mrs. Bruno are the best for you. And thank you all. Stay well.
Legislator Walz is not present. Okay, so the consent agenda is adopted 21-0.
Thank you very much. We'll get Legislator Walz when he comes back in. And moving on to the non-consent agenda.
The first resolution in non-consent is Resolution 78, establishing a policy requiring nonprofit vendors to comply with applicable financial reporting and tax filing regulations.
Yes. Legislator Uchitel?
I'd like to make a motion to refer this to the Laws and Rules Committee.
And a second. Legislator Maloney? All in favor? Any opposed? Motion.
The resolution is referred to the Laws and Rules Committee by a vote of 21-2. Making sure nobody else is here. Right, nobody else left. 21-0. The next resolution is a bond resolution, Resolution 85, authorizing the issuance of an additional $315,622 bonds to pay part of the cost of the preliminary site preparatory expenses for the installation of electric vehicle charging stations in and for the County of Ulster, New York.
Before we go to that, can we note that Legislator Walz is back in and... Can we have your vote on the consent agenda?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. I know.
And on the referral?
The consent agenda is adopted 22-0. There was also a vote on Resolution 78 to refer that resolution to Laws and Rules. Do you want to record your vote on that one? And it's an affirmative vote.
Yes.
So
thank you,
the resolution is referred to Laws and Rules by a vote of 22-0. Now on to the bond resolution number 85. Clinton.
Yes.
Collins. Yes. Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Gavaris.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kitchen.
Yes.
Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maloney.
Yes.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
Uchitel.
Yes.
And Walz.
Yes.
The resolution is adopted 22-0. The next resolution is Resolution 91, providing authorization for U.S. Treasury reporting for 2025 and 2026 ARPA Administration Estimated Costs, Agricultural Crisis Relief Coordinator, Department of Finance, Division of Recovery and Resilience.
Is there a motion for discussion?
Yeah, I'm just explaining.
Yes, Legislator Maloney.
Yeah, my no vote. This is a position that I think we could take that money and give it to our soil and water department, and we've discussed this at length last year. Originally, this position keeps changing. Now we're talking about open space. It's kind of a hybrid position. It was supposed to sunset after 2 years, so it's going to be pushed to act fast and get money out. And now we're hearing that they hope to continue this position. They're supposed to be liaisoning with farmers, which is exactly what soil and water does. I know they've added things over the past couple of months. I haven't been able to quite follow it. I know last year, speaking to those over in soil and water who already have the relationships with these small farmers that know exactly what they need, where the funds need to go, the kinds of equipment that they're helping these farms get and use. And I just got to remind you what we just saw, and we're all moved by a minute ago. Dispatchers are just like COs in this county. There's about half of them. Are gone. We can't fill the positions. We need money to pay the rank and file, and it's coming. And if we're just going to find ways to spend money that sounds good without really explaining it well, when you already have a group here that's doing a great job with soil and water,
That's what I believe. I'm sure I'll hear it's there's nothing here to see. It's going to work great. This position is going to hit the ground running. They're going to liaison and meet all these farmers. They're going to get the money out. They're going to do amazing things with open space. It's going to be magic like nothing else we've ever done in this county. This one's going to be the one that we just nail. That's how I feel. I'd rather see this money go to soil and water and focus more on COs and dispatchers.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan for the first time.
Yes. All these elements that were just described were proposed initially for this program when it sought funding through the ARPA grant monies, federal funding. And the Ulster County has not in the over a decade received any farmland preservation implementation grants. These FPIG grants are sometimes millions of dollars, can preserve large farms, go into conservation. The Soil and Water Conservation District has never applied for one. And the Soil and Water Conservation District does a lot of great work, but does not generally do farmland preservation. Also, Cornell Cooperative does a lot of great work. The Ulster County Planning Department does a lot of work on agriculture, agriculture being the second largest economic driver in Ulster County. So this position was envisioned as a way to begin to figure out where we might either create a new department or add staffing to be able better to support farmers and go for a lot of funding, like the FPIC grants I mentioned, also funding that can serve as a match to monies that the Soil and Water Conservation District is already getting. So this program is going to allow many farmers who already receive small grants through Soil and Water to cover many more acres in cover crops or other forms of soil health interventions and planting of pollinators and do the farmland preservation that has not been happening in Ulster County. This legislature has put aside actually millions of dollars for farmland conservation over the past many years in the budget, and it's never been expended. So this position and this program was designed to fill that gap, jumpstart a system that it had been leaving farmers without these resources, and I think it's going to do exactly that.
Thank you. Any further comment on the resolution?
On the resolution, we are short yes with one no. Legislator Maloney.
Short yes.
The resolution is adopted 21-1. Number 94 is another bond resolution authorizing the issuance of an additional $10,000 bonds to pay part of the cost of the preliminary expenses for the reconstruction of the SUNY Ulster Children's Center in and for the County of Ulster, New York. Clinton.
Yes.
Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Gavaris.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kitchen.
Yes.
Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maloney.
Yes.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
Uchitel.
Yes.
And Wolf.
Yes.
The resolution is adopted 22-0. Resolution 117, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget related to an allocation of aid to prosecution funding from the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services, District Attorney.
Legislator Maloney.
Yep, I'm going to be a statement no. I just can't, and I'm going to do that once in a while when it comes to this DA's office because I'm getting frustrated. You know, when Mr. Kavanaugh was running, he actually talked about CARES too. Said he'd investigated. I've talked to former DAs recently that agreed it needs to be looked into along with other things. I think we're getting to a point with the Samadhi organization where we need a local DA that believes that white-collar crime needs to be addressed as well. We have our Commissioner of Finance locked up right now. There's an individual, former Deputy Comptroller, Alicia DeMarco, worked for a private firm couple of years ago, found $1 million in theft, had the CFO ready to plead. To this date, our DA's office just has done nothing. I have someone else that's down in the Orange County DA's office right now with $50,000 from a construction firm. They're handling the case in Orange County because apparently we just don't do white-collar crime in Ulster County. I don't understand what the deal is, but at some point, if you keep coming to us and asking for funding just to give raises, then for one, stop screwing up violent crime and letting murderers off, and on the other hand, do something about white-collar crime. And if you're just not going to do it, I find it unacceptable. We need some kind of public integrity bureau here, and we need people to know in this county that if you rip people off and you steal, especially on a higher level, that you're going to be prosecuted, you're going to be investigated. So I have to be a statement no, and I hope the DA at some point comes to the table because he's been talked to by us, by many legislators, and he just doesn't seem interested at this point. And I think it's too important, and I think you see the result. I think people are acting in a way in Ulster County because they know we're not looking at it. We're not investigating.
Thank you. Legislator Minority Leader Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to vote in favor of this only because it's a stipend coming from a state grant, and it's not a salary increase. I do agree with my colleague, Legislator Maloney, on that we should be looking at white-collar crime some more. I don't want to mention any names because of possible investigations that are already ongoing.
Thank you. Any other comments on the resolution?
On the resolution, we are a short yes with one no. Legislator Maloney.
Short yes.
The resolution is adopted 21-1. Resolution 120, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of an additional $1,414,100 bonds of the County of Ulster, New York, to pay part of the cost of the replacement of the Wolven Bridge on Zena Road in and for said county. Clinton.
Yes.
Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Gavaris.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kitchen.
Yes.
Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maloney.
Yes.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
Uchitel.
Yes.
And Walz.
Yes.
The resolution is adopted 22-0. The next one, another bond resolution, Resolution 122, authorizing the issuance of an additional $1,209,000 bonds of the County of Ulster, New York, to pay part of the cost of the replacement of the Fantenkill Bridge in and for said county. Clinton.
Yes.
Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Gavaris.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kitchen.
Yes.
Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maloney.
Yes.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
Uchitel.
Yes.
And Walz.
Yes.
The resolution is adopted 22-0. The next resolution is 124. It was pulled from the consent agenda, and that is approving the execution of a contract for $4,519,345 entered into by the County Bet and Crink LLC Department of Public Works.
Legislator Maloney.
Yeah, I'm going to be a statement no because we're fund appropriators, and there were some questions about what normally is a 10% rate for basically the engineering firm that will be the project manager, oversee that things are done to spec, that codes correct. And on this, it's 20%. There was just no explanation as to why. We were told they were the lowest qualified bid, but it was pretty confusing how that was explained and why they were at 20%. At first, we were told that's just the going rate has gone up, and then there was some backtracking to say that the overall cost was still lower, but that rate was higher. The bottom line is we have this firm that we don't even know how many bids went in. We don't know if there were things in this RFP that guided us just to this certain company. Did they already have another project going with us? There are things that can be put into the RFP process that basically only enables one or two firms to even be able to bid. So when we start getting told, don't worry, there was some kind of bid process, that doesn't necessarily mean
that our diligence stops there and we accept. But the fact that we could get no answers about how on a $4.5 million project, almost a million was going to this firm that's just going to oversee things. And like I said, the answers kept changing in caucus and listening to the public works meeting where an engineer asked questions and got no real answers. At some point, we have to say no until we get real answers.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan.
Yes, the simple answer is that this was the lowest qualified bid, and the percentages that were appropriated to inspection are different than we're used to seeing, but that did not cause this bidder to raise their price beyond the other bidders. Legislator McCullough in the committee, Public Works Committee, did ask, and we were informed there were more than three bids. So we really don't have reason to inquire into these percentages other than to note that if they go up across the board, then that could increase our costs as a county if all of the bidders had increased their prices. But this bidder, though having a higher rate for the inspection, still came in lower than multiple other bidders, and therefore it's very appropriate for us to award this contract.
Thank you. Majority Leader Uchitel.
I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Legislator Harmon.
Thank you, Chair. After our caucus, I just did a very cursory look into what the going rate, what percentage of a capital project goes to engineering inspection, which is what I understand the cost concern is about. I found wildly disparate charges. However, all of those that were in the 7 to 15% range were from roughly 2005. So we may have been underpaying for such things for quite some time. And more recent numbers came in at closer to 25%. I'm no expert. This was a very short investigation, but perhaps that can help to allay some of the concern.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan for a second time.
I just also want to add that the engineer on the Public Works Committee, who isn't here tonight to speak for himself, did ask questions, did have them answered, and voted in favor of moving this resolution forward.
Thank you. Legislator Maloney for the second time.
Yeah, the engineer that was on the DPW committee actually asked the questions because he works for a firm that does that exact work and stated that it looked to be double what he thought the going rate was and what his firm charges. After not getting very good answers, he decided to vote yes. He did. But he's also working for a firm that gets contracts with our county and other counties. He's probably in a pretty tough spot at that point. But he was the one that actually pointed out the fact that this was double what it should be and asked questions that we did not get any answers for. All the questions I asked during caucus, none of them were answered by the deputy executive. They did not have any of those answers. And now we're Googling around and going, well, maybe it's high, maybe it's low. We don't know. That's my point. We're the legislature. Kick it back and get some real answers when it's in DPW until they come to us and explain. They should probably reach out to the firm and ask the firm why they're charging that rate and it seems high. But we don't do that. We just go, we ask some good questions, we don't get good answers, and then we vote yes. That's what we do here. And we wonder why we get the results we get. We wonder why every capital project goes double, triple what we're originally told. You want to know why that happens? Because we just keep on going.
Legislator Nolan, this is your third time, so will somebody give Legislator Nolan time? Legislator McCullough has. Thank you.
I just want to again express my discomfort about presenting the views of a legislator who is not here. Thank you.
Thank you. Minority Leader Roberts.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. I was going to be a yes on this. I've heard some strong arguments. I want to thank Legislator Maloney for bringing this up. I just hope by passing this tonight, does it set a precedent with other construction management companies to raise their inspection fees. So I'm going to change my vote to a no.
On the resolution.
On the resolution, we're a short yes with one no. Legislator Maloney.
We're a short yes, one no. Legislator Roberts.
The resolution is adopted 20-2. The next four resolutions are bond resolutions. The first one is 126, authorizing the issuance of $3,950,000 bonds of the County of Ulster, New York to pay part of the cost, bless you, of law enforcement center boiler replacement in and for said county. Clinton.
Yes.
Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Gavaris.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kitchen.
Yes.
Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Aye.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maloney.
Yes.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
You should tell.
Yes.
And Walls.
Yes.
The resolution is adopted 22-0. Resolution 129. Authorizing the reconstruction of various roads throughout and in and for the County of Ulster, New York at a maximum estimated cost of $650,000 and authorizing the issuance of $650,000 bonds of said county to pay the cost thereof. Clinton.
Yes.
Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Gavaris.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
No.
Kitchen. Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Aye.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maloney.
Yes.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
You should tell.
Yes.
And Walls.
Yes.
The resolution is adopted 21-1. Resolution 139, authorizing the issuance of $310,000 bonds of the County of Ulster, New York to pay the cost of county office building security and fire alarm upgrades in and for said county. Clinton.
Yes.
Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Gavaris.
Yes, and I would like to thank Legislator Hansett for her work on this.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kitchen.
Yes.
Kovacs.
Levine.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maloney.
Yes.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
You should tell.
Yes.
And Walls.
Yes.
The resolution is adopted 22-0. Resolution 141, authorizing the issuance of $500,000 bonds of the County of Ulster, New York to pay the cost of reconstruction of and construction of improvements of to various county-owned properties in and for said county. Clinton.
Yes.
Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Gavaris.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kitchen.
Yes.
Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maloney.
Yes.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
You should tell.
Yes.
And Walls.
Yes.
The resolution is adopted 22-0. Resolution 145, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $50,000 entered into by the County Bonadio and Co. LLP, Department of Finance.
Legislator Maloney.
We just seem to keep seeing this. So I believe if we did close out our 2022 books, if they're even closed out, we were the last county in the state to close our books by months. We have a problem in finance. I have a resolution going up next month to start a stipend for CPAs in this county, and I hope that some office besides the legislature and the comptroller's office actually uses that stipend at some point, because we desperately need CPAs inside the executive branch of government, the huge executive branch of government that has serious, serious finance problems, from getting the ARPA funds out. I mean, we have towns that have come and talked about it here. Things are not being done there, and this is just another private group that we've brought in to do the job of the everyday finance and budget departments. And it's getting old. On top of that, we also have used this Bonadio group to create this bizarre compliance whistleblower hotline where we've given nicknames to county executive appointees, and now there's this phone line that you can call. They put out a poster that was bizarre. In the middle of the poster, they asked for whistleblowing against legislators. If you have anything on a legislator was part of the poster. It was bizarre. I wonder if it even violates certain aspects of whistleblower protections that the state and federal government lays out, but we've been promised that they're going to give us a presentation or do something that I've yet to see. The executive's office needs to get on board with multiple things with regards to the Bonadio group. One, keep it to corporate compliance with regards to DSS. Two, figure out how to close your own books out and hire people that can do the job that other departments, finance departments in other counties are doing without bringing in the Bonadio group to do our work for us at a high cost.
On the resolution.
On the resolution, we are a short yes with one no. Legislator Maloney.
Short yes.
The resolution is adopted 21 to 1. Resolution 148, amending the Ulster County Sexual Harassment Prevention Policy and Complaint Procedure, Department of Personnel.
Legislator Stewart.
This is going back to the resolution we just voted on. I would like to add my vote to Legislator Maloney.
Resolution 145 is adopted 20 to 2.
We're on 148 right now. Legislator Maloney.
Yeah, I'm going to be a yes on this. A lot of this are, I think, state requirements language that needed to be changed anyways and then codified. But I've been pretty disappointed at certain things that have happened in human rights with people's trust being violated, things being passed along that isn't supposed to be complainants, people ended up talking to people's bosses. Sounds like there was a letdown when it comes to sexual harassment here. We've all read about it in the paper. And when we try to get to the bottom of it in laws and rules a month or two ago, we actually had the brand new deputy executive come in that wasn't here, the only person that couldn't answer the questions. The two deputy executives that were actually here during the sexual harassment protection breakdown last year, they actually did not come to that meeting, and they waited outside either door. So as soon as the meeting ended, they came in so as not to have to answer any questions on the record. And then we see this policy here and the few changes that aren't state requirements almost speak exactly to what this storyline was that really didn't always make a lot of sense as to why these women that came to the executive branch of government and many people in the executive branch of government were not helped in the way that they could have and should have been. This, what we have here, is good, but it's not a solution or accountability to what happened. And my guess is we'll never get either.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan.
I'd just like to express my appreciation to the deputy executive who came to Laws and Rules and answered a long, long series of questions, who helped us understand what the issues were, very complex situation. We had members of the public present to bring back up their concerns, and that was received very well by the committee. And I thought that the entire conversation was very helpful. The tenor of the questions was quite pressing and direct, and I think it was important to have a deputy who was able to remain composed under what I considered to be a grilling about issues that had happened some time before. The issues were complicated. The laws that are already present in New York State were helpful but not determinative. And bringing our own Ulster County Code closer to that, I think, is helpful. But I think this is a realm in which we may have to expect and accept some uncertainty and inability to satisfy everyone. Because if a complaint is made and the reaction is an overreaction, then that's not fair to the person who's been complained about. If a complaint is made and there's an underreaction, then the person who's complaining has not been fully served. And it's very difficult in our present time, I think, to get that just right. And I just commend the executive's office for continuing to work on it and this legislature for continuing to work on it.
Thank you. Minority Leader Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was at the Laws and Rules Committee, and Deputy County Exec Capiano was grilled pretty hard. And I think this policy, I think they heard us loud and clear. I want to thank the County Exec for putting this forward. It is difficult for, you know, to put all this together in a timely fashion. She did it, and I appreciate that.
Legislator Kovacs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to, as Chair of the Law and Rules Committee, I want to comment on Mr. Maloney, Legislator Maloney's description of the committee meeting that took place on February 8th. His description is spot on. We did receive the Deputy County Executive, who was not employed by the County of Ulster during the time period when the human rights complaints were made, the sexual harassment complaints were made, to the County Executive's office. And, you know, what we're looking for in response to credible claims of sexual harassment, it's not an overreaction or an underreaction. We're looking for a reaction. We're looking for our policies to be followed in a timely manner and victims' rights to be respected, the privacy of all parties, the victim and the alleged person who injured the victim. All of their confidentialities or privacy rights should be respected. I would point out that, you know, I'm going to vote in favor of this change to the policy. I understand that most of it is mandated by the state of New York, and most of these mandates were promulgated by New York State about a year ago, so I'm glad that we're getting around to it. I would point out that the standards of conduct for Ulster County, as set forth and revised as late as January 23, really governs the issues that were raised by the victim in the human rights complaint. This standard of conduct applies to all Ulster County employees, volunteers, interns, contractors, and vendors. Seems that it would actually, the commissioners of the Human Rights Commission would fall under this standard of conduct. So that being said, I'm going to vote in favor of this change. I don't know if it would have made a difference, but I think it is a step in the right direction, and we want to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Thank you very much. Majority Leader, you should tell.
Yeah, I just feel it's should be stated for the record and for anyone who's watching at home that might be confused that the situation in question, the sexual harassment didn't occur in the county, in the county's discharge of the duties. It occurred outside of the county, and I'm certainly not defending it. It sounds quite credible, but this is a very tricky area as we make this change to the sexual harassment policy. You know, as we have volunteers that have duties outside of the office, how we proceed with that. There's still a fair amount of judgment that's going to have to be exercised on the part of people receiving complaints. I think the county executive's team, navigated a really challenging situation, gave us a very specific accounting of it, and we might be upset about who came to a meeting, but ultimately that's not our call. And I applaud the county executive's team for doing their best to satisfy us by providing a lot of information, which they did both in the meeting and outside of it.
Legislator Maloney for a second time.
Just in closing, there was difference of opinions amongst legislators here tonight about what actually happened at that meeting. You can get right on YouTube, the 100 people that follow Ulster County. I hope you get on the meeting and actually watch it for yourself. I'd love to hear from them what they take away from that meeting, the questions that were asked, the answers we received, the fact that nobody had any answers that came to the meeting. And at the end of the day, these women reported things to the executive, many people in the executive branch of government, and went months without even hearing back. It was an accusation, what sounded like credible accusations about someone on the Human Rights Commission. I don't think the director of the Human Rights Commission was even told about it. These women were given no guidance as to where they could go in the state if they couldn't be helped here. They were basically just ignored, and it went on and on and on for months. It was unacceptable. It's still unacceptable, and it's unacceptable to not go to the meeting and answer the questions. And like I said, I ask anyone that's paying any attention, the few people that do here, and I don't blame you, go to the meeting and watch the meeting and decide for yourself who here today put forth the what agrees with what you saw.
Thank you. On the resolution.
On the resolution, we are short yes.
Short yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
The resolution is adopted 22-0. Resolution 152, amending the term of office for commissioners of the Board of Elections, Ulster County Board of Elections.
Minority Leader Roberts.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. Long as I can remember, and before that, the term of the commissioners has been 2 years. By extending the term to 4 years takes power away from this body and the people of Ulster County. I am personal friends with Commissioner Quigley and am cordial with Commissioner Torres. As far as I know, they both do a good job, but that may not always be the case with future commissioners. We are going to hamstring ourselves to be stuck possibly in the future with a commissioner who is ill-equipped to carry out fair and open elections, do the work of the people of Ulster County and this government.
Thank you. Legislator Maloney.
Yeah, you know, the appointment of the heads of the boards of elections for both major parties has always lined up with the term of the legislature for a reason. Every 2 years, they know that they get reappointed. It's not a race. They don't have to go out there like we do for 8 months, and half of our term is spent trying to get reelected, sadly. They just have to come up here and get reappointed, and they do a good job, and they get reappointed. But there is politics in every board of elections. That accountability, why would we take that away? Why would we take that oversight away from ourselves? It's always been that way. It's been that way for a reason. I've heard 33 other counties have done it. Well, my kids come to me all the time, say, well, Johnny's parents are letting them do it. Is that a reason to do it? People are leaving New York State by the thousands, and we're saying, well, other counties are doing it, so let's just do it. That's a reason? That's one of the main reasons I've heard. Look, let's just be honest. Over the last couple of years, we've had a kill and maim list. We've had a kill and maim list from one of our heads of the Board of Elections that literally wrote out a list of people she would like to kill or maim and then accidentally emailed those people, most of which have run for office recently. On the other side, we had, and these things happen, people are people. They make mistakes. We force these people to be political. We do. The party bosses expect it. They wouldn't have this job if they weren't involved in politics. So we force them into politics, and then now we're going to give them a four-year term with no oversight and accountability. We need that. On the other side, you want to know why we only have six people on Ways and Means? You want to know why certain freshmen are chairing certain committees? Those were negotiations made moments before the chair of the legislature was elected with the other head of the Board of Elections. You don't think I'm telling the truth? Ask for some text messages. And you know what? That's not corruption. That's not theft. It's not anything. It's politics. Politics with a capital P. The kind of politics we want to keep out of our Board of Elections. The kind of politics we want to know that these two commissioners know they got to keep it. They got to keep it straight and narrow as much as they can, because if they don't, then there is that threat of being swapped out. And I think we have towed the line with let's make a deal and kill and maim. So I'm just surprised we got eight freshman legislators. Everything seems to be, everybody's getting along. We're singing songs and all these things. It's great. And I think these two commissioners said, why not get a four-year term out of this? Let's go now. They'll say yes, and look at us. Look at us, giving away the last little bit of oversight and power we have here in the legislature. After the charter, we went from everything to being nothing. And here we are with one of the last few things we have and need to have, giving it away, just giving it away. I hope people change. We're close. I hope people change their vote here, and we keep this on a two-year term. It matters.
Thank you, Legislator Collins.
We've been spoiled in this county by having, in my opinion, one of the best election commissioners in the state. I've worked with her a lot. I've worked with her extensively over the years. I've also worked with other commissioners in other counties that are not nearly as good. I know what it is to work with a great elections commissioner and what it's and what it's like to not work with a great elections commissioner. Right now, you know, we have a great one. Sometime in the future, we may not. And if we do end up with a not great elections commissioner, I would like it to be a two-year term, not a four-year term. So again, let's celebrate the fact we have a great one now, but let's keep the terms at 2 years.
Thank you. Legislator Green.
I just want to be clear. I will be voting no, but I want to be clear that I support the current commissioners. I just don't think it's wise to extend the term. Thank you.
Thank you. On the resolution.
On the resolution, we are a short yes with the following no's. Legislators Green, Stewart, Collins, Hewitt, Donaldson, and Maloney.
We are a short no with four yeses. Legislator Kitchen, Kovacs, Cochran, and Hansett.
The resolution is adopted 14-8. The next resolution is Resolution 153, reappointing Commissioner of Elections.
Can I have a long roll?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Garrett.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kitchen.
Yes.
Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Hi.
I'm going to be a no on Ms. Torres. I can't support folks who try to thwart the democratic process by litigating victories in court. And my hope is that the latest Supreme Court decision sets a precedent that allows the people to choose who's on the ballot and not partisan bureaucrats with a political agenda. So. With that said, I'm going to be a no.
I'm going to be a yes, but I respect my colleague and his points, and I think you got people all over the country on both sides of the aisle that don't believe in the process anymore, and I think that's pretty scary. And I've heard it from both sides, and here we are in the Ulster County Legislature, just willy-nilly giving up that 2 years, the oversight. We are the legislative body. We are the board of directors. It is our job to see that we're the body. We're the voice of the people. We have to be the bad guy sometimes. And to give this up when it's lined up for 2 years, it's just unbelievable. But I'm a yes, like we always are, a yes. But we've lost oversight and accountability. Sad.
McCullough.
Yes.
I'm a yes, and I appreciate the process that requires the election commissioners to follow laws and also to take actions. There is a Democratic commissioner and a Republican commissioner for the precise reason that there may be political differences that cut in different ways. And so for the Democratic commissioner to work in that way, I think is appropriate. I think for the Republican commissioner to work in that way when similarly situated would be appropriate. And I agree that we have in Ulster County, and I hope that the public is aware of it, commissioners that are moving our elections forward to increase access, make it much easier, keep it of exceptional integrity, And we're very fortunate to have both commissioners, in my opinion.
Roberts.
I'm going to be a yes on Commissioner Torres, despite the fact that she had me removed from the Green Party line in 2021.
Sperry.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
You should tell.
Yes.
And Walls.
I'm a yes, but I do support what Legislator Lopez said, and I do think that in that particular case that it wasn't handled appropriately.
The resolution is adopted 21-1. Resolution 154, reappointing Commissioner of Elections.
On the resolution?
On the resolution, we are a short yes.
Likewise, short yes.
Resolution 154 is adopted 22-0. The last resolution was the late resolution 156, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 3 of 2024, a local law amending Article 5 of the Ulster County Charter and amending Section Article 5 of the Administrative Code for the County of Ulster to modify various provisions in relation to the Commissioner of Health or Public Health Director and the Medical Examiner.
Legislator Kovacs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ulster County residents deserve the best. They deserve a health department that is run by in a nonpartisan way by a licensed healthcare professional, not a political appointee or a career bureaucrat. This resolution, this local law, would change the Ulster County Charter. In 2006, the voters of Ulster County, in 2007, the voters of Ulster County approved our charter narrowly in a referendum, primarily because there were promises of accountability. One of the changes in the charter that changed the pre-charter legislature was the promotion or the requirement that the health commissioner be a licensed physician in New York State. Having a licensed professional, such as a physician, in charge of a county department provides additional safeguards. These individuals are licensed professionals and are thus held to a higher standard. It seems improbable that we will have difficulty finding a licensed physician to run our health department now that we have a potential vacancy. Former county executive Mike Hine hired not one but two licensed physicians to serve as Commissioner of Health, Dr. Lamar Hasbrook and Dr. Carol Smith. This resolution, I understand, is not an adoption of a local law, but rather is simply setting a public hearing, but I believe it's premature. We should have a diligent search to locate a licensed physician to run a health department, and only then, if you're truly unable to find one, which I would find hard to believe, only then should we have a discussion on this proposed local law. Thank you.
Thank you. Legislator Collins.
This proposed law is doing exactly what the previous legislator just said, is we would like to be able to hire a physician, but we may not be able to find one. If we don't find one, we cannot hire anybody. This will allow us to hire someone if we don't find a licensed physician. That's what this law is allowing us to do.
Thank you. Legislator Harmon.
Thank you, Chair. Doctors are really great at things that doctors are great at, but administration is not necessarily one of them. And a fantastic public health administrator is crucial in the event that we find ourselves again in a situation like we did during the pandemic. It is not just about knowing the best diagnosis. It is about the mobilization of resources and the ability to navigate between systems. So while a physician has wonderful purpose, we may not be best served by that particular degree for our overall public health. And I think that this gives us the opportunity to have a wider range of expertise from which to draw, which is only to the good.
Thank you. Majority Leader, you should tell.
Yeah, I just want to echo these points and just say, if we're going to talk about the importance of having a doctor with a medical degree, I think we should talk specifically about what type of degree and specialty we're looking at. You know, a lot of us have benefited from working with different kinds of specialists. I had heart surgery once. You know, I prefer to think of my heart surgeon as someone who only specializes in that one thing and, you know, isn't necessarily boning up on how to run a very complicated department. So we should be specific about what types of medical degrees we're looking for, if that really is what we're looking for. But we can be very specific about what a medical director qualifications might look like, because we just went through a pandemic. We have huge challenges with logistics. We have huge challenges with like operational efficiency. These are the types of things that I see the role evolving into. You know, I have a cousin who has a medical degree, and I barely trust him to operate a car, honestly. And if you're listening right now, I'm referring to my cousin on the other side of the family. But in all seriousness, I think that having this flexibility is important, and I'm supportive of this.
Legislator Maloney.
So I just heard a little while ago that I asked, because I long thought that this position was a bit, the salary was a bit high, not nearly as much as the mysterious psychiatrist that I think we have to get to the bottom of and find out why we're paying somebody $400,000. Nobody knows who they are, and they may even have a private practice. But if you were going to take the medical license off of this position, which, by the way, had their job duties cut in half about 2 years ago, and we never re-explored the pay rate of this position when we created the Mr. McDonald's position, which should have been talked about, should have been done, we didn't. But we're told now that we are going to have a doctor. It's going to be a part-time doctor, because this position needs to sign off on all kinds of medical documentation, and you have to have a medical license to do that. So while we get rid of this expectation, what I wonder about is, do we already have that person in mind? Do we already know who we want to hire, so we're going to get rid of this? Mr. Kovacs is exactly correct. This is a conversation that should happen before we put this resolution up, because once this goes up and once this passes, we're going down that path. And if I've learned anything in this county, is we don't get off paths once we get on them, especially when there were paths that the executive got us onto. So we are going down here, whether we like it or not. And I do think it's valuable, and I could care less whether the doctor knows how to drive a car or they're a very good doctor at all, as long as they can run the office and then sign off on this documentation that we need them to sign off on. We don't have to hire two people for the same amount of money because we have this, and that's what we're being told. We're going to cut. We don't even know how much we're going to pay this new person. It depends on how much we're going to have to pay this part-time doctor. I mean, what are we talking about here? This doesn't make a lot of sense. It's not well thought through, unless you know who it is that you want to hire and they're not a doctor. Then it's very well thought through, and you're on your way to your political appointee that Mr. Kovacs is so concerned about. And I agree with him for being concerned about that. By the way, there's a little policy involved here. How you do things, right? Day-to-day operations, that's over there. In here is policy, how you do things. This seems like a bit of a policy question, whether or not we want a doctor in that position. And once again, we're not involved in that conversation because we don't demand that we are. We don't vote something like this down. Let the deputy, right? That's why you have a deputy. That's why you have vice presidents and vice and deputies, because when the top person's not there, you have a deputy to handle things. So we have a deputy there. Like I said, the job has been cut in half just 2 years ago. So I'm pretty sure this deputy could handle it. Why the legislature decides how to go and move forward. But we don't do that. We just rubber stamp. I'll be a no.
Legislator Kitchen. Could you use your microphone, sir?
I was in the Health and Human Services meeting last week, and this topic came up for discussion. I agree with Legislature Kovacs and Maloney. I believe, especially coming out of COVID, we would want somebody to have someone in that position of a high standard. And I believe that maybe the deputy, if we can't find a medical doctor in 3 to 6 months or whatever, you know, but in the meantime, that deputy director could take the helm, then I think maybe after a certain time period of not being able to find a medical doctor, then we could go down this road. But I don't I think it's very premature to do this now without seeking applications for the position that's currently going to come available from a medical doctor with those medical qualifications. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Legislator Kovacs for a second time.
I request a long roll.
Clinton.
Yes.
Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes, and I want to remind everybody we are voting on a public hearing right now. That's what we're voting on.
Thank you. That was my question.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Guerreras.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kitchen. Kovacs.
No.
Levine.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maloney.
No.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
No.
Sperry.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
Uchitel.
Yes.
And Walls. The resolution is adopted 18-4. The resolution is adopted 17-5.
Thank you, everyone. I'm now going to move us into public comment on matters that are currently not before the legislature this evening. I want to remind everybody that you have 2 minutes to speak. And this period is on issues not before the legislature this evening. We encourage everyone to speak, and we ask that everyone keep their comments respectful. Is there anyone signed up for this public comment period?
There are. There are three speakers signed up. The first speaker is Henry Gage Jr.
Good evening. My name is Henry. I'm the founder of Build Green Now, one of the individuals involved with the USHB 11. We're the ones that got hemp lime into building code. We say to our community that we're looking at a $2.2 billion a year opportunity. However, I want to start my comment today on the topic of awareness, sustainability, and the notion that we really need to figure out how to collaborate. Because of what we've experienced in working with the legislators, and because of what we've seen, we realize that there are times where there are aspirational statements that are made about what we want to do, but there are consequences. There are things the community really wants to do, but there's an absence of, as Representative Maloney indicates, accountability. That's said over and over and over. For that reason, we've decided to change our approach. There was legislation, or at least a report, that was due last August by the legislators. We're not aware of the results of that report. We've heard aspirational statements about getting to Corticator, getting room at iPark, et cetera, et cetera. We've decided we're going to focus squarely on financial and environmental sustainability and the rebirth of what we are calling human general intelligence. Just to comment on that, Build Green Now, we're reestablishing ourselves as a public benefit corporation franchise model focused on these things. The reason is that we realize that it's really going to take talking with people to understand some of the threats of AI and making better decisions. In our view, human general intelligence is the solution to restoring the promise of democracy leading to a future we prefer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sally Warren.
Hello. My name's Sally Warren. I'm Bill Green now as well, and I'm picking up where he left off to explain to you what human general intelligence means and why we've kind of gone in that direction. We are a black and women-owned franchise networking company focusing on communities and sustainability and hemp. Basically, we're also AI experts. But what we've seen is in the wave towards adopting AI is that people are losing jobs. What people also need to understand is that AI needs human general intelligence, because what it comes up with isn't necessarily correct. And so what we're adopting is the use of the communities and the intelligence that they have to feed into the businesses that we're putting together. We're working within Ulster County, but we're also talking to other states and other counties. And we're having a lot of interest in what we're doing. We've already completed one main project with the retrofitting of a house, and what we're focusing on is building other retrofits and retrofitting existing properties with locally grown hemp. So it's local communities, local hemp, locally grown to keep local communities warm. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
The last speaker signed up is Steve Rice.
Thank you for allowing me to speak tonight. I'd like to put my ship's cap back on to honor the people that are sailing in harm's way, if no one objects. I'm here tonight because I'm leaving the Trails Committee, and I want to thank you. I want to thank this body for the past 15 years. It's been my honor and privilege to serve. We have had trail leaders from several counties ask how the Trails Advisory mechanism came to be. And planning is the answer. Because Ulster County saw the value in planning for trail development with the county's non-motorized transportation plan, which I've linked in my comments, the committee was formed to advance those plans. The committee has grown to include stakeholders in most of the county's trail organizations in recent years. Having active legislative members on the committee has provided the guidance needed to translate good ideas into good policy through legislative resolutions. All of this has resulted in much more trail being available to many more people in many more places. A report on this is planned within the next 30 to 60 days. So again, I'm grateful for this honor and privilege. Legislators Hewitt and Nolan for bringing the issue of raw diesel locomotive to their CMRR committed to installing air quality monitoring before the trains run on March 23rd, are in talks with the county now. Trying to reach an agreement with CMRR on the corridor has been ugly, and the ugly is back. They're already doing work on the corridor, and within 75 days of getting a new contract for 5 years, the county has had to issue an intervention. So it's time to issue a moratorium on any new building in that corridor until Resolution 488 can be looked at and resolved and new legislation issued to cover the changes. It is time.
Sir, I'm going to ask you to wrap up.
Things have changed. We need to make a new plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I'd like to call on Minority Leader Roberts to read the names of community members. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. Yes, please. Superintendent Baden, I apologize.
Good evening. Mike Baden, Town of Rochester Supervisor, and newly elected again today, President of the Supervisors Association. So I'm here to speak about EMS, seeing the very moving ceremony tonight. led me to ask, where are we going with EMS in this county? We had a very, very well put together committee that was meeting every month. The minority and majority leader were serving on that. The last time it met was May of 23. The meeting was canceled in June, July, August. Since then, it's been silence. I sent an email to the entire body saying, where do we stand? I got zero reply. I know a committee or a firm was hired to prepare a report that was well over a year ago. They certainly should be done by now. So this is something that the towns really need. We're all muddling through. Many of us have created ambulance districts taxing the local taxpayers to make these things happen. But that's only for basic life support, not ALS. We really, really need the help of the county to solve these problems. So thank you. I'm asking that if you ask the same questions that we're asking, maybe we'll finally get some answers. Also, to bring to your attention, there is a committee called the Intermunicipal Collaborative Council. It is formed by the charter. It's supposed to meet twice a year. I'm in my seventh year as town supervisor. It's met one time under the former county executive. And at that meeting, we were asked to adopt the minutes from the previous meeting, and not one person in the room was even in office when that previous meeting was held. This is a very well-intentioned committee. It seems to just be put on the back burner every year. We need to get these things going. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Supervisor Baden. I'm sorry, is there anybody else who would like to speak? Anybody else? Okay. Bernardo Leader Roberts, if you would read the names of the community members who have recently passed. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, it saddens me to read the names of Walter G. Fry, Jr., former legislator from Saugerties. Walter served the community and county well. He was well respected by both sides of the aisle. Michelle Watson of Highland, who's the legislator Hansett's sister. She's a grandmother and mother who will be missed by her family. Mary Germanario of Marlboro, Christine Cobiello, Marlboro, William Wilklow, Highland, Robert G. Gidney, Modena, Rosalie A. Shamberry of Modena, Glenn S. Giametta, Newburgh, Agnes Van Curen of Walk Hill, Michael Miranda, a long-serving Shandaken judge who was well-respected in his community. Sherry D. Donato, Marlboro. Roger Donlin, Saugerties. Peter E. Schultes, Saugerties. Geraldine B. Maglieri, Saugerties. James R. Brown, Jr., Saugerties. Mary Catherine Collins, West Hurley. John Stanzioni, Purley, Julian Wiener of Kingston, Helen Olson, Town of Ulster, Stanley D. Frere, Walk Hill, Charles F. Shield, Kingston, Gerald A. Fricker, Jr., Modena, Mario Villawan of Kingston, Charles Bowton, East Kingston, Wesley A. Booley of Shokan, Vincent Russo, Milton, David Mead, Saugerties, Elizabeth Legg of Saugerties, Nancy Ginther of Saugerties, Ramona Fredone, Woodstock, Jean Patrick Cummings of Saugerties, and Noah Ortman, Town of Ulster.
Does anyone have someone they'd like to add or speak to? Somebody who is Legislator Kitchen.
I'd like to correct the name of one of the people up there. That is Sean Patrick Cummings of Saugerties, who's misread.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan.
I'd just like to say a word or two about Mike Miranda, town justice in Shandaken. Mike Miranda is a staunch Democrat, and in the town we also have a staunch Republican. And those two town justices really modeled for people how individuals of very different persuasions, beliefs, could work together, serve the town. People, I think, in Shandaken feel particularly proud of our town justices, the town court, as a place that people can go and really feel that they've been treated fairly. And it's a source of pride that those two people provided for the town over many, many years. Mike was also a personal friend, and I just really appreciate his sense of humor, and he will be missed.
Thank you. Legislator Collins.
Thank you. Ramona Fraiden was one of the first women to work in the male-dominated field of superhero comics. She co-created and was the principal artist for Metamorpho and Aquaman. And for 15 years, she drew the Barbara Starr comics. She passed away at her daughter Amy Fraiden's home on March 24th at the age of 97. I think almost all of us legislators know and appreciate Amy, and many of us have already expressed our condolences to her. Amy let me know that one of the last things that her mother did was to submit her absentee voter ballot. I would ask all of us to be like Ramona, superheroes for democracy. Thank you.
Thank you. Legislator Clinton.
I would like to add Jean Ann McGrain from Gardner, who passed away on March 16th. Jean Ann was the chairperson of the Town of Gardner Open Space Commission for many years, and she spearheaded the Gardner passage of the Community Preservation Fund, which provided funding from real estate sales for open space preservation in Gardner. She was an effective advocate for good government in many capacities, treated people with kindness and respect, and will be greatly missed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Deputy Majority Leader Levine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to briefly speak tonight about a true American hero in every sense of the word, the first American soldier to be awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor for service during the Vietnam War, Roger Donlin, Colonel Roger Donlin, born in the town of Saugerties. Colonel Donlin graduated from Saugerties High School in 1952 and enlisted in the Air Force in 1953. He also attended the U.S. Military Academy at West Point for 2 years before leaving to achieve his dream of serving as an infantry officer through officer candidate school. And he earned his BA from the University of Nebraska at Omaha, his MS from Campbell University in North Carolina, and he had an honorary Master of Military Arts and Sciences from the Command and General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and an honorary Doctorate of Humane Letters from Benedictine College in Atchison, Kansas. He served for a total of 33 years in his specialties as an infantry, special forces, and foreign area officer before retiring in 1988 in Leavenworth, Kansas. On July 6, 1964, then Captain Donlin and his Special Forces Team A-726, along with 60 Chinese Hmongs, defended Camp Nan Dong, Vietnam, when they were attacked by a force of 900 enemy troops. It was the first battle of the Vietnam War, where the regular North Vietnamese Army joined forces with the Viet Cong from the south to try to overrun an American outpost. For his actions at Nam Dong, Roger became the first American soldier again to be awarded the Medal of Honor in Vietnam. He achieved many awards, honors, and accolades during his lifetime, but he considered his two reconciliation projects in Vietnam as his contribution to heal the wounds of war. Both he and his wife, Norma, believe that those who have invested the most of themselves in war should be the first to reach out in peace. Roger is honored in the town of Saugerties with the town hall in his name, and also in the village of Saugerties. The gymnasium above the village fire station is also named in his honor. So I just wanted to say a few words in honor of a true American hero tonight, and may his memory be a blessing to all that knew him. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to now call on Vice Chair Megan Sperry, who represents District 17, to offer some closing words.
I have so many words. Are you guys comfortable? Just kidding. So according to U.S. Census data, the female population in Ulster County is 50.1%. These women are mothers, daughters, and sisters. They are young and aging. They are black, brown, and white. They are cis and trans and gay and queer. They are in crisis or recovery. Some are survivors and some are thriving. They are housed and unhoused. They are mentors and educators, bus drivers, farmers, restaurateurs, small business owners, doctors, lawyers, scientists, accountants, designers, union members, superheroes and civilians. They enjoy being outside, hiking, biking, and walking. They are curious. They are religious. They are feminists and humanists, climate advocates, political and apolitical, and so much more. And they are all our constituents. And this body has been elected to represent every single one of them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next regular meeting of the Ulster County Legislature will be held on Tuesday, April 16, 2024 at 7 p.m. in Legislative Chambers, 6th floor Ulster County Office Building, 244 Fair Street, Kingston, New York. Resolution deadline is Wednesday, March 20, 2024. I'd like to ask for a motion to adjourn. And a second. All in favor? Thank you.